Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Assassination has been dramatized by literature and politicized by infamous murders throughout history, and for former CIA agent and bestselling author Robert Baer, it's a source of endless fascination, speculation, and intrigue. In his new book, The Perfect Kill, he wraps a captivating look at the history and theory of political assassination around the tale of his dangerous two-decade-long pursuit of one of the deadliest assassins, who was assassinated in 1980. Robert Baer is one of the most accomplished agents in CIA history, a winner of the Career Intelligence Medal. He is currently the National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN, and we welcome Robert Baer to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's very nice to have you with us. Ultimately, what is the story you wanted to tell in this book of looking at political assassinations?
How hard it is to pull off and make it work. And assassination works when it preserves force and avoids war. And those conditions are so rare it almost never works. And I go through all 21 laws saying, this has to happen, this has to happen, and so forth. And if you can't meet those conditions, don't try it.
How in stone are those rules? I mean, is a lot of it play as you go, or do they have to be set in stone before you enter in?
They're pretty set in stone. I mean, I go through modern assassinations and pick out the ones that work and the ones that didn't. And they're pretty consistent. Like, I mean, it's obvious things like not missing, because you may not get a second chance. It shows vulnerability on your side. But more than that, if we look at political violence today, and this it's sort of glib, but don't kill everybody in the room. Because ultimately, assassination has to be an act of justice. You're cutting out a cancer. Adolf Hitler would have, is an example, and you can go right through history and find other ones that would work. Saddam Hussein, who I tried to kill in the mid-90s, clearly if we had gotten rid of him at that point, we wouldn't have had to invade in 2003.
So where did that fail? What went wrong in that, do you feel?
Well, I mean, I was at the center of this. I led the CIA team. And certainly a lot of it was my own failure. We didn't have good enough intelligence. We didn't have good proxies. You had an administration that was not very happy about this. You know, there was a lethal finding on the books, but they didn't want to execute it. So we were just sort of half-hearted in this in so many levels. And I take full responsibility where I failed. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that getting rid of Saddam and replacing him with almost a military junta, we wouldn't be better off, saved hundreds of thousands of lives, as I just said, and not destroyed the country. At the end of the day, again, it's got to be morally justified in assassination to carry it out. You just can't find somebody you don't like or symbolic murder, like the IRA tried to kill Margaret Thatcher. It didn't do them any good at all. They failed. It killed 5 innocent people, and they paid for it.
But you write about this in the book. I mean, you have to have full support behind you, and it seems what often happens is that support starts to erode rather quickly when you get into the thick of it, when you need it the most.
Well, also, don't forget, this is a country that with people that don't like assassination. They hate the word. They think it's immoral at the very end. They think of Kennedy, which of course was an act of a psychopath. It had nothing to do with political murder. And if the country's not behind you, and the legal system's not behind you, you're going to run into problems. I mean, the SEALs are out there effectively doing assassinations. So is Delta Force, but it's the full authority of the Pentagon and Congress and the rest of it. And we're in the middle of a war. So it's more clear-cut then. It's in peacetime that it's so difficult to make these things work.
You talk about the importance, you mentioned this a moment ago, but you talk about it in the book at length, about making it personal. It has to be personal. And is that a rather easy part? Can you talk yourself into that as the person who has to ultimately pull the trigger?
I don't do a very good job at it because I grew up like you do, middle class. You know, violence, any sort of personal violence, is abhorrent to me. But you know, I was a CIA agent, and I was asked to do these things. And in the course of trying to get rid of Saddam, we overran three Iraqi divisions. But it seemed to me, and that was a situation of a war, it's a lot easier to do once you cross that line. But if it were actually done face to face, I'm the last one you'd want somebody to do that. But it's with the true assassins are really do know their targets. And I was in part of an investigation in Lebanon for the UN of an assassination investigation. And the people that assassinated the former prime minister knew him. I mean, they sat down with Key 2 days before they assassinated him to measure him, whether they really had to get rid of him. And they decided he was a threat to them, and that's how they did it. So they knew all of his sins and why they were doing it.
In looking at the reasons for assassination, and I guess I'm interested in a timeline. I mean, someone like Saddam Hussein, it seems like it was on the radar for a long time, but is it, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it should be well thought out, right? I mean, it shouldn't just be a knee-jerk reaction. It should be something that takes a long time to come to make that decision.
I think that the Bush administration, H.W. Bush, decided they wanted to get rid of him. During that war, they went after a couple bunkers they thought he was in 1991. They did it from the air. They couldn't locate him. 2003, same thing. There were 6 attempts on his life right before the war. We all sort of recognized him as the problem. He was insane and violent. And no one could ever live with him again. And I think we would have all been better off, as I said, getting rid of him in 2003, even one of those strikes. But the problem is, nobody could locate him. And it was a failure of intelligence, because that really, Iraq was always sort of a black hole for us, and we couldn't get anybody inside to tell us where he'd be.
You tell the story in the book of the two-decade-long pursuit of one of the world's deadliest assassins, Haj Radwan, and at the center of all of Hezbollah's mayhem from the 80s until he was assassinated in 2008. Were you a part of that from the very beginning?
I was a part of it because of the embassy bombing in April 1983. Best I could tell from our intelligence, he was at the center of this. He recruited the suicide bomber. He tried to kill our ambassador. Phil Habib was the guy's name at the time. He didn't happen to be in the embassy. And he went on and attacked the Marines, attacked the second embassy, was probably involved in taking down Pan Am 103, maybe with the Libyans. He was truly a threat to this coming country, an imminent threat, and in 2008, the United States participated in this assassination, and for good reason at that point. And they could define him as an enemy combatant and an imminent threat. It's an act of war. He had crossed the line. I'd like to talk about it because before I understand a subject, I like to engage. So into all 21 rules, the author, me, in a nonfiction book, is trying to kill the protagonist, which makes an interesting structure and made it much easier for me to write.
You do talk in the book about the use of drones. I'm curious. This seems to be much talked about now, and the accessibility of drones. What are your thoughts?
I look at them like automatic weapons. You know, if you're in the field and you're in war, an automatic weapon, you tend to use a lot of ammunition for no good purpose. You use it fast, and you also end up killing a lot of people you don't need to. Same way with drones. If it's, you know, this is almost industrial slaughter. We can do it from the air remotely, you know, looking at flat panel screen. There's these signature strikes where we don't even know who we're killing. We just assume because they're in an area and they got guns, they're enemies, and they couldn't be. So, and they might not be, I'm sorry. So it's, you know, who are we killing, and what has it got us? if we look at Pakistan today, it's no different than when we first started the drone campaign. And then you have ISIS, which looks to me like Al-Qaeda 2.0. So getting rid of bin Laden in 2011 made us feel better, but we've got something worse in our hands today.
Being?
ISIS. They're not going away. They are a threat to this country. Maybe they're not sending people across the Texas border right now, but I think there's going to be some sort of blowback. We have an Islamic State for the first time.
So
the reason is there's grievances. I mean, the Sunnis, the sect that they represent, feel they're under threat, and they're slashing out.
So who is the person, though? I mean, if you talk about assassination, who is the person in that case that ends that?
Well, I don't think that we could assassinate the head of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and make much difference. Someone's going to rise up, another militant, maybe worse than him. I just don't think it's going to make any difference. There's just too many people. It's too many fractured groups, and they're operating without any sort of central command. That's not going to make any difference. It's not like getting rid of Saddam, who there was nobody that was going to be worse than him to replace it. I mean, he was one man, in a sense, a charismatic leader, and his removal would have served everybody's interests.
So where does that leave us, do you think, over the next, and this gets back to my timeline question. I mean, are we on a fast track that we need to do something fast, or do we have, in realizing this is relative, but do we have, quote unquote, time to figure this out and eventually do something right and follow these 21 rules?
I don't think there's anything we can do. Let's take Libya, which tipped over the edge into chaos and is fighting all day. You know, there's nothing we can do. We can't send the American military in. We can't send the American military into Syria or Iraq right now. It's too big of, you know, no one's going to tolerate it. Republicans or Democrats. I'm afraid we're going to just have to let this stuff burn itself out and hope it doesn't cause too much damage. It's a virus. What scares me, though, is if we take sides in what is essentially a civil war. If we effectively align with Iran, we effectively align with the Shia Muslims against the Sunni. And it's that kind of blowback that worries me. I don't want to see, obviously, I don't want to see an attack in this country, but if there's one or two, you know, a lot of things come undone, the Constitution and the rest of it. It's inevitable. I just hate getting involved in these civil wars in the Middle East. I've been in them, Lebanon and other places, the Sudan. You never come out of them well.
Is there any room for optimism of the great strife that we have in so many parts of the country? Is there any optimism that you have that we can find a peaceful solution?
I'm optimistic in the sense is once this insanity manifests itself and beheadings and the rest of it, you see the Muslim community turn against it. And it's happened in the past. These people have gotten out of hand in the 7th century and 11th century and so forth, and the community turns against them and destroys them. And that's what I'm waiting for now. How long it'll take, I don't know. But ultimately, this is going to go away. We're not going to be invaded by radical Muslims. Or they're not going to. It's not going to take hold in this country either. But where it is occurring, I think it'll a year or two, it'll burn itself out. So, yes, I'm optimistic.
The name of the book is The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassins. Robert Baer is the author. One of the most accomplished CIA agents in the agency's history and currently National Security Affairs Analyst for CNN. Robert, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Again, Robert Baer's new book is The Perfect Kill, published by Blue Rider Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.